Leadership is interesting. I think it's something that evolves. Being a leader means sometimes you have to be unpopular. I will never peak. I'm not even close to peaking.
Today, I'm joined by Borja Kwan, a seasoned marketing expert and the founder of 415 Digital, a performance advertising agency that is helping businesses grow through strategic campaigns on platforms like Google, Meta, and LinkedIn. Welcome to Venture Visionaries, where we explore the stories and insights behind the leaders driving change in their industries. I'm your host, Thomas Igemet. And in this episode, Borja will share his journey from his early days at a pre-IPO internet startup to his current role leading a team that prioritizes customer centricity and strategic collaboration to deliver superior performance advertising results. We're going to dive into the evolution of leadership in the digital age, how 415 Digital stays ahead of industry changes, and the growing need for creative and data-driven solutions in performance advertising. Borja also offers thoughtful advice on talent acquisition, personal growth, and finding balance as a leader in a hybrid work environment. Whether you're in marketing, leadership, or entrepreneurship, this conversation is full of practical takeaways and fresh perspectives. Let's dive in. Was there a defining experience or an early mentor who shaped your approach to leadership or client service?
I think if I draw upon my experiences, it certainly brings me back to the first job that I had out of college, where I graduated from school. I went to college in Boston, and after graduating, I ended up working for an internet startup in Boston, joined them pre-IPO as number 29 officially. I still have that badge. I ended up staying with that company for 8 years. And during those 8 years, there was an immense amount of change, right? Early on, the company, you know, was growing. A year after I joined, they went public. A lot of internet companies were going public. And that experience of an IPO was my first experience. And it was certainly very unique and exciting. Then a year and a half later, the dot bomb hit and a lot of companies were really struggling. Fortunately, the company that I work for was in a very healthy financial position, but was not affected a little. And so through that, we had layoffs, we survived and rebounded and sort of continued to grow. But I think it was during those 8 years that I was fortunate to come across a lot of people that were very influential in my life professionally, who ultimately were my mentors, not one single individual, but I would say a number of individuals who I ended up becoming close with. I really, from the outside, from afar, really admired them for various reasons, but mostly because of their success in business. For me, I always was someone that looked at others who were older, more experienced, more successful, and I always wanted to understand what their path was. I ended up at an early age taking the initiative to ask for their mentorship, and they obliged and they sort of took me under their wing and they made time for me because I expressed interest, because I was curious. And it was through those interactions, through those meetings and time spent with them that they definitely taught me a lot.
What were some of the most impactful lessons that you learned from these mentors that still influence you today?
Leadership is interesting. I think it's something that evolves. I think my leadership style has not been the same throughout. I think I have learned how to become a more effective, a more successful leader. I think the things that I learned, and this was often advice that was given to me, learn not only from a leader what to do, but what not to do. We've all worked for leaders that we liked. And then unfortunately, we probably all worked for leaders that we dislike. So remember the things that you did not like when you were being managed by a leader, and make sure not to do those same things when you're in a position of leadership and you're managing people and things like that. So what I learned in my leadership style is tough but fair. I also came to realize as a leader that being a leader means sometimes you have to be unpopular. Making tough decisions that people may not always agree with may lead to being unpopular, But if you're doing it because you know it's in the best interest of the company as a whole, or your clients or your shareholders, and sometimes you just have to make the decision and overrule others that may have a different point of view or an opinion on it. For me, it's certainly always listening and understanding people's point of view and factoring it into whatever decisions are made. But at the same time, I think you as a leader have to be decisive and you have to make a decision and you have to commit to that decision and you have to see it through. And I think that's my view on leadership, even as I operate my digital marketing agency. There are a lot of things that we take input from the team on, but sometimes against that input, we have to make a decision that is different than what they want. But we provide an explanation as to why we made that decision. Because I think it's always important to explain the why, not just make a decision and dismiss people's input. And I think when you do that, people tend to understand more because you've taken the time to help them understand why you went in another direction despite asking for feedback.
How would you describe who the ideal customer profile is for 415 Digital and how you add value to them?
We are a digital growth agency that specializes in helping businesses of all shapes and sizes and stages of development scale through advertising on Google, Meta, Bing, LinkedIn, TikTok, and a few other platforms. Those are the main platforms that we're buying media on to help our customers. Our ideal customer profile is a business. It doesn't matter if you're a B2C, B2B company, who's spending somewhere in the range of $80,000 to $100,000 a month in digital advertising. It could be on one of those channels. It could be on multiple channels, but that you are currently in a position to either spend or you are spending somewhere in the $80,000 to $100,000 a month range. That's really the criteria. Obviously, there's other criteria. You need to be able to afford the fees that we charge. We typically want to assess your business to make sure that we can bring value. How do we bring value to the other part of your question is, ultimately, we're in the business of helping our customers drive conversions. For a B2B company, that could be, how do we help you build pipeline, MQLs, which are marketing qualified leads or sales qualified leads? How do we help you generate pipeline for your business? If you're a business to consumer business, how do we help you drive sales, right? Mm-hmm. So you're selling books, pet supplements, whatever it is. That's really our goal. We're not in the business of having people engage with ads, click on ads. Those are what we consider to be somewhat vanity metrics for the companies that we work with. Mm-hmm. For all of the clients that we work with, we have to drive conversions, which in our case is either a sale, a lead, an appointment, a metric like that. And that's how they evaluate success for us. How we bring value is we are responsible for coming up with the strategy, implementing that strategy, building campaigns, optimizing those campaigns across these different ad networks, helping them set up all of the tracking infrastructure needed to support our paid media campaigns, designing creative or ads, whether those are static ads or motion ads for any social media marketing that we're doing, and then providing reporting to measure all of the marketing campaigns that we're running.
How do you think about 415 staying ahead of industry changes and integrating new strategies to stay competitive?
The landscape is ever changing. I've been in the digital marketing space since 1998. So that is 26 years, I think, officially. I lose track, but it's a long time and it has evolved immensely. Staying ahead is very important. And one of the benefits that we have as a Google Premier partner, as a Facebook Premier partner, is we have very good relationships and assigned teams at each of these respective companies who work with us, and they educate us and inform us of new things that are coming out. In fact, they give us access to beta features and products that we can test before they go to the public. So we're always keeping ahead by way of just having these close relationships with a lot of these ad platforms, and they give us a lot of visibility in what some of the features are on the product roadmap, and they give us access to start using and testing these with some of our clients when it makes sense. So I think there's constant change, but what always remains the same as an agency is your clients are holding you accountable to growth. no matter what the changes are that these platforms have, the ecosystem is more competitive. Costs are going up. It's getting more difficult. There's more competitors that are entering the landscape. With new players entering the market, there's more options for advertisers, which is great for us because it allows us to test and experiment on multiple channels. And ultimately, for us, we make decisions based on math, right? So that is how we're making decisions on where to deploy our investment on behalf of our client. It's based on performance.
Could you share an example of where adapting quickly to change in the industry ended up setting either you or one of your clients up for success?
I think for us, when I think of like adaptation, it's more around being agile around client goals. It's more that than like an industry change. Like whatever happens with Google, it's kind of like for us, we're still business as usual. Mm-hmm. I think the adaptation comes a lot from client demand versus like the platforms where a client says to us just yesterday, obviously we're entering into the fourth quarter, which for a lot of our e-commerce clients, it's the peak season for them. The goals are changing. So they wanted to achieve X profitability. Now it's why, like things are just constantly changing, and us having the ability to adapt quickly is really what stands out for me, because it's hard when you're on track to hit a goal that a client sets, but then they change it, they make it harder. That means you have to change a lot of what you're doing behind the scenes in terms of the media plan. So it's, I think, more changes around that. I think just the agility you need to have when working in what is a very high-paced environment with very fickle clients who are under immense amount of pressure to perform in their jobs for a variety of reasons. And we have to sort of react and respond to their changes in goals or objectives.
I'm curious how you think about fostering that customer centricity throughout your team.
Before I actually decided to go into the internet space in 1998, I had always worked in hotels during the summer. In college, I studied abroad and I did an internship, a very sort of comprehensive internship for a year at the Ritz in Madrid. At the time, it was Hotel Ritz. Now it's Mandarin Oriental. That was more exposure into the hospitality business. But I was always in positions of serving clients. And I got to learn from one of the best brands in the world when it comes to hospitality. And it was through that experience that I really learned a lot about customer service. And a lot of that experience is what I brought to 415. Now, when I say customer service, it's not just being responsive to Thomas when Thomas sends me an email. We should promptly reply to emails from our clients, requests that they have. That's kind of what I call very basic customer service that we have to provide our clients. And it would be unacceptable not to. But I think where we are obsessive is over customer retention. Once we land a client, we are very obsessive over keeping our clients. And that is sort of proven in the fact that our average retention rates are somewhere in the 32 to 34 month range, which in our industry is actually very good. There's a lot of sort of turnover in the agency space. A lot of companies sort of turn and burn clients because they have a very sort of healthy sales pipeline. For us, it's the opposite. Our pipeline is not full of prospects. We have a couple prospects a month. And that's because we built our business over the last 7.5 years from referrals and word of mouth. And so for us, customer service is really something that we care a lot about, and we invest a lot in sort of training and conversations with our team and what that means. As an account manager at 415, I consider the two most important parts of the job is really building a relationship with your clients and driving good outcomes, i.e. results. If you can do those two things and you have had a successful outcome with your clients, right? And why a relationship is important is because if you underperform or if something goes wrong, if you have a good relationship with your client, they will likely give you a second chance. But being strategic and really understanding our client's business, really digging deep as a subject matter expert, understanding what their pain points are, what their goals and objectives are, how they're evaluated in their positions is really where we spend a lot of time. And ultimately, our efforts are measured. So there's nowhere to hide when you're doing what we're doing, because everything is measured and tied back to our effort.
Can you tell us about a time where you guys went above and beyond?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of it is just the effort, the attention to detail and the care that our team puts into client relationships. I think what we get feedback on is it's the little things. The big things matter, but it's, hey, Keenan was up on a Saturday answering my email. Keenan has two young children at home, but he took the time because he knew it was important to me to respond to an email at 8 p.m. on a Saturday night. One of my other employees knows something about one of our clients that's sort of personal, related to sports. You know, we got an email from a client saying that was so nice. They sent me a jersey of the Buffalo Bills, my favorite team sport. I think a lot of what clients appreciate are the details, because I think, you know, we're in a commoditized space. A lot of agencies do the same thing we do. Yes, some are good, some are bad. But the point is, a lot of what they care about is the effort we put in, the attention to detail. A lot of that is what matters. So when our team is aware that someone just going above and beyond in the effort that we put in, the attention to detail, caring about our clients, making it a bit more personal, where we're actually taking an interest in them as people, and really building relationships is such a critical part of how we're successful. We're always driving performance and we're always talking shop, but I think really the differentiator oftentimes is a relationship that we have with our clients, which takes a lot of effort. But if we pay attention, there's a lot of opportunities to really work on that.
What does collaboration look like at 415?
Yeah, so a lot of the service delivery requires a team effort. So there are opportunities for each individual to work independently, but most of what we do is work collaboratively to deliver the service to our clients. Typically, for every engagement, it's a team of three and four people, minimum three, sometimes four. And so we found successful in sort of building team is being very clear with roles and responsibilities. So everybody has a role. Not one role is more important than the other. Doesn't matter if you're an entry-level person at this company or you're the most senior person at this company, you all contribute to success. And we can never consider one role more important than the other. They're all playing a role. And so I think what we do a really good job of is being very clear out of the gates on sort of roles and responsibilities. What is each person responsible for in delivering success for that client? Then we give people a lot of autonomy. We don't sort of micromanage them. I basically say to them, guys, we are assigning you these accounts. I want you to tell me what you need to be successful. My job is to remove blockers and give you what is needed, assuming it's a reasonable request. But my hope is that I'm hiring really good people and letting them do what they were hired to do. But what we're trying to do is put people in positions where collectively they can put their heads together and create really good outcomes for our clients. And so my measure of success as a business operator is the less involved I am, you know, with a thriving business, the better job I have done. The more involved I am in the day-to-day management, the less of a good job I've done.
How do you think about team location, placement in this new digital age?
Our point of view on team building and relationship building is we have right now a distributed workforce. We have three offices. So we have an office in Mexico, two in California. I'm in one of the offices in Northern California. And we have a couple remote employees. I would say 90% of our staff is in the office. But where we landed is we believe in giving people freedom and flexibility. So we ended up with a hybrid model at our company, which means you're in the office 3 days a week and you work from home 2 days a week. I have a very strong opinion on the work from home full time opportunities. I don't think that this can be disputed, or I'd love to debate someone on this topic. But I think when you're in your early 20s, right out of school, you really need to be in an office. I don't think it's healthy to be in your bedroom working, not getting up, getting out of the house, meeting people, spending time in person, developing your soft skills, learning through osmosis. It's just not the same, no matter what people tell you. Yes, there's technology out there. We use it all. Jira, Slack, you name it, Teams, Zoom, Google Meets. We all use the tools. It's not that we don't embrace the tools, but there will never be a replacement for face-to-face. And we've looked at the data too, which is productivity, but learning. And we found that people that are in the office learn much more quickly than people that are remote. Mm-hmm. They're learning things as it relates to our field by just being in an office, getting in-person training, asking questions, because the accessibility is there versus sometimes you have to do it over Slack. It's not the same. Our team is learning at an accelerated rate by being in person. We consider it a competitive advantage, and we talk about it when we're talking to prospects, and we want them to know that we have teams that are spending time in the office together. They're working together on projects. They're talking about the client work together, and they're building relationships. And we also find that people are healthier and happier. You know, we do have to hire remote in some cases because it's the only way we can attract talent. If we limit it to the locations that we have in San Francisco or Los Angeles, our pool is much more limited of candidates. So because of that, we're forced to consider remote, and we have remote people, and it's working out for us. It's not to say that it doesn't work, but our preferred formula is really having people together 3 days a week.
It's really clear that in order for your way of working to function, you need to bring in some really high caliber people, irrespective of the level. How do you think about identifying talent and retaining top talent?
I think it's very hard. It's like the human capital side of operating a business is the most difficult, at least in my opinion. I think finding clients and retaining clients is far easier. But I think attracting and retaining talent is very challenging, in particular in a post-COVID environment. But I think it's the most important part of my job is really finding candidates. And obviously, we don't do it alone. We have folks that help us, but it's really difficult. And so when you know you're really looking for a special type of person who will adapt to the environment that you created for your organization, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not always easy. And even during the interview process, it's very difficult to make that determination. And it's only that you're able to make that determination once they're sort of in the fire. Once we assign them their clients, once we see how they work, the interview goes only so far in qualifying them. But ultimately, what we found is that no matter what we've introduced to the interview process, until they actually live a day in the life of 415 Digital and experience it for 3, 4, 5 weeks, it's really hard to see. But I think it's something that we spend time on. We do spend time interviewing them. We have them do specific exercises to learn more about them, their hard skills, their soft skills. And then when it comes to retention, it's something that's so important to any business. So what we try to do at 415 is really, you know, one of our values is really just open and honest communication. For me, I believe in just having an environment with a lot of transparency both ways, meaning I can be very open and direct with you and vice versa. Doesn't matter if I'm the co-founder. It doesn't matter. You have the ability to talk to me openly in a safe environment. I will not criticize you. I will not penalize you. I would ask that your feedback or your comments be professional and productive. But if they are, anything is fair game. We don't need to have side conversations. We can speak openly about issues or things that are on your mind. I love a diversity of ideas. I love diversity of people. I want having people to have different opinions. I don't want everybody to be the same cookie cutter person. I think retention, the way we work on retention is just by building relationships with our team. this is no different than a friendship, right? I mean, yes, it's different in that we're not all friends, but you have to put a lot of effort into building relationships with your team, which means giving them all the tools they need to be successful, giving them the training they need to be successful, helping develop them, showing them the opportunities that they can look forward to, defining goals for them and working with them to hit those goals, spending time with them, not talking about work, meaning yesterday, the team, we had a nice dinner together. We really didn't focus on talking about work. We talked about family. We talked about travel. We talked about hobbies. We were intentional about not bringing work into this space that we were in because we wanted to just get away from it. Yeah. So a lot of it's like relationship building and really providing opportunities for people to grow and develop. And that requires a lot of training.
How have you thought about your own development as a leader?
Oh God, growth is constant. I will never peak. I'm not even close to peaking, right? In any aspect of my life as a business owner, as a husband, as a father, like there's just so many areas in my life that I could improve upon. And what I'm happy about is I feel like I make improvements and I make progress, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes the progress is small, but it's progress. Like I'm moving in the right direction. So I feel good about that. Now there's so many levels above me that I could get to, but at least I'm moving in the direction that I want to move. I think a lot of the learning for me has come in a practical sense, learning through the experience, starting a company, making your first hire, getting your first client, losing a client. There's all of these experiences that you're dealing with as a business owner, some of which are amazing, some of which are really difficult, that I think I have grown as a result of experiencing those things, but also persevering and facing them head on. There's just so many things that happen that are, we'll call it unfair when you have a business, right? Mm. From the employee side, from the client side. And so a lot of my growth has come from just the experience of operating a business and being sort of presented with puzzles and challenges. And I do have people that I sort of go to. It's not a long list of people, but there are people that I go to that are on my sort of phone that I call to oftentimes for just validation. Like, hey, this came up. Am I thinking about this clearly? This is my point of view, but maybe I'm too close to the situation.
What specific trends do you see shaping the future of performance advertising right now? And how are you preparing 415 for those challenges?
What we find is a lot of the clients that we work with need us more now than ever. Budgets have been cut. They are looking to reduce costs. Looking at a P&L we do for many of the clients we work with, we kind of look at opportunities for cost reduction. Payroll's a big one, but marketing's a big one, right? Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of what we're doing here is really doubling down on some of the services outside of media buying. That's like sort of the core competency for our business is media buying. But there's a lot of other areas that clients are starting to really need more of our services. So, you know, we talked about design. That's a big one. So now it's hiring more designers to support the demand that's incoming from our clients. Yeah. A lot of projects that we're getting, a lot of requests for, hey, I need someone to help me either build a website, build a landing page, build ads. There's so much opportunity for us to build our business. You know, we're 7.5 years old. We've been growing month over month. We've not borrowed any money. So there's no debt on the company. We've been profitable since our first month. We believe that there's just so much opportunity within digital marketing and performance marketing specifically that we are in a position to just really scale the business. And so for us, the investment is in building. We opened up an office in Mexico about 6 months ago. And so for us, it's like we're in growth mode.
What advice would you give to aspiring leaders and digital marketers who are looking to build a career in performance advertising?
The first thing that comes to mind is be patient. Oftentimes, there's an opinion or perception that things happen quickly. Success mm-hmm. is achieved quickly. Mm. I think a lot of people through social media, as an example, are very influenced in the process. And they say, oh, this person has achieved success. And this person may or may not have achieved success. But if they did, you must remember that it took them 30, 40 years to do this. Be patient, work hard, contribute. get things done and build mental endurance, the journey is going to be difficult no matter what. We know that life is going to be difficult. You're going to apply for a job you didn't get. You're not going to get the promotion. So the sooner you build sort of the mental and emotional endurance and strength, I think you're going to be in a much better position. What worked for me is I kind of was just focused. I didn't get distracted with office gossip. I spent time learning from people. I was curious. I worked hard. I contributed. I took advantage of every opportunity that was given to me. So when someone said, who wants to volunteer for this? I raised my hand. Even if I didn't really know what I was getting into, I just said, it sounds like something that I should be doing. And if you do those things, I think you will find yourself probably getting a lot of opportunities from your employer. Learning is not something you should only do 9 to 5. I think if you really are committed to becoming really good at something, it's going to require you to spend some non-work hours and learning, right, on your own. I think some people sort of put that sole responsibility on the employer to become good at something. And I think what I found is that anybody who's good, whether it's business or sports, they're doing reps on weekends, on weeknights. They're staying curious and they're putting time into getting better at these things on their own outside of the 9 to 5 because they really care about being the best and they really care about getting better. And they know in order to do that, they can't just do it X number of hours.
I'm curious how you think about balance.
My view on balance is there's no such thing as balance full time. There will be times in your life where things will be imbalanced and there will be times in your life when things are balanced. You know, the sooner you embrace that point of view, the better off you're going to be. I think a lot of people seek this constant balance. And I just don't think that that's a realistic expectation, whether you're an employee or an owner. I think there are going to be times in your life when there's going to be a lot of stuff going on. Being stressed and overwhelmed is a feeling that is normal. And I think if you embrace it rather than resist it, you're going to be better off. And if you accept it as normal versus abnormal, I think you're better off. I just have that going on in my life. Like sometimes I'm really balanced and sometimes I just feel like there's a lot going on. I'm pretty stressed, but I'm okay because I know it will pass and then I'll be back to kind of normal. And I think there's a lot of things that we coach the team on how to sort of work through those things. But also I'm a big proponent investing in yourself, in your health, both mental and physical. I think mental health and physical health is really important and should be prioritized. Number one, I think we have to be selfish and we have to take care of ourselves because the better we take care of ourselves, the better equipped we will be to get through the imbalance that lies ahead, right? Whatever it is that we need to do to recharge, reset, take care of ourselves, it's going to make you so much better in all facets of your life. It's not a requirement for the job because it's not my place to tell you to do these things, but I'm only saying it because I care about you. And I know the sooner you implement that, the better off you're going to be because I find a lot of people are putting their health second. I just don't think that's a recipe for success. And long term, it's just not going to work.
Thank you for tuning in to this insightful conversation with Borja Kwan of 415 Digital. From his customer-first approach to fostering real team collaboration and staying competitive in a fast-changing industry, Borja's experiences highlight the power of strategic thinking and adaptability in both marketing and leadership. If you found value in this episode, don't forget to subscribe to Venture Visionaries for more stories from leaders shaping the future of their industries. And be sure to check out 415 Digital and their innovative work in performance advertising. As always, keep pushing boundaries, stay curious, and continue envisioning the possibilities ahead. Until next time, stay visionary.